Hello and welcome. My name is Nema Kambona, and today I'm delighted to be interviewing Amanda Holliday on Diversity Business magazine. Amanda is a visual artist and filmmaker, and I've discovered recently a poet. Indeed, she describes herself as a polymath, and followers of Diversity Business magazine may remember her from a previous interview on the Creative Goddesses from the African Diaspora Summit. Amanda has had a collection of poems recently published called Art Poems. They are from a series called New Generation of African Poets, published by Akashic Books. So, Amanda, congratulations and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Nima. It's nice to speak to you again.
Indeed. I really enjoyed reading the art poems and I loved the concept. I understand all the works have been inspired by real life art at different points in your life. Can you explain the process?
Well, yes, having been an artist myself, I've always loved, you know, visiting galleries and being inspired by particular pieces of art. I mean, some art works speak to you more than others. And I think it was the Donald Rodney work in the house of my father, which is a very large photograph of his own, the palm of his hand, and this very tiny little house sitting in the middle of it, which is made out of his own skin. I found that image, you know, it's quite a strong, very powerful image. And it's that stayed with me for quite a long time. He died in 1998. He had sickle cell anemia. And that's one of my first poems that I wrote was about that image. And the poem that's called In the House of My Father. So, and the other works just came after that. I decided to write a series of art poems because they were providing me with so much information. It was at a time when there's a lull in me doing artworks, I think, really. And so I started using this new way of looking at art and seeing what that came up with. And a whole series of poems came out of it. You know, I'm still actually writing poems about art. I find great inspiration from them.
Yes, and we're very much aware of that when reading. They're very vivid and they create a wonderful story in the reader's mind, wonderful picture. And many of them are humorous, and you've mentioned In the House of My Father. Would you read the verse for us?
Okay, In the House of My Father. My father lived in a skin house, four flaking walls pinned together in the palm of a hand. My father prayed every day that the pins would hold, that skin was enough to stop the wind blowing in and our family blowing out.
Oh, I love that. It's for me, it has a tinge of sadness and rather poignant. Can you tell us something about, is this from something that reminds you of...
I don't know, it conjures up a lot of things that... It's hard to describe where a poem actually comes from. I feel, you know, it comes from a lot of things, a lot of black experience. I feel it comes from, it's got a kind of religious undertones. I think, you know, the nature of our relationship to God as black people or people from the diaspora is kind of quite a complex one, you know. And so there are all these ideas that have fed into it. I think it's a powerful image, you know, also knowing Donald Rodney as an artist myself, because he was one of the early artists in the Black Art Group in the movement in Britain in the early 80s with people like Keith Piper and Claudette Johnson, Marlene Smith, Eddie Chambers. He formed a core group of artists that were quite political and powerful artists. And then when he died in 1998, he kind of left a big hole. He was one of the kind of the joker in the pack. He was, you know, he was a very humorous person. And he was, you know, he was in and out of hospital for his entire life, but was always making art, whether it's out of his x-rays or, you know, photographs. He was constantly making art. So he's a very inspiring figure, really. And, you know, I don't know what he meant. Pardon?
And still inspires you in so many different ways today.
Yes. I think he's inspired a lot of artists, really. You know, he's done such a range of work.
Okay.
So I can't really sort of talk more than that about where the inspiration came from this. I suppose, you know, even with all this kind of Windrush stuff now, it's kind of, it's making me think about the fragility sometimes of our, you know, of our situations.
Yes.
You know, I think that's what I was trying to conjure up in this poem.
Okay, no, that's very interesting. And another one is wind. It's very beautiful, yet it's haunting. That has been inspired by Yinka Shonibari's wind sculpture in Nigeria. Would you also read the poem so that the audiences get an idea again about...
Okay, yes, this is Wind. He's actually done a lot of versions of this wind sculpture, so I think they're actually all over the world now. Wind. She had learned to rise from the dead, dip and hover around the bereaved, disguised in finery, a batik burqa lifted on the wind, a listening presence in gardens, in the park, eavesdropping on the griefs, soaking out a life.
Oh, thank you. It's just so haunting. I actually got lost with your listening to your words there. So were you at any of the unveilings? I mean, obviously you've seen these
Well, I've actually not seen in real life. You know, I've seen photographs of it. The photograph inspired me because this idea of a piece of fabric, you know, that's solid, really, a sculpture of fabric. You know, I think that's what's so amazing about his work, and the fact that he uses these African fabrics, batiks, and so forth in a lot of his works. And Yinka is an artist who I've actually known for very many years back in the days before he was famous. You know, he was on the Bedford Hill Gallery Artistic Committee. So, you know, I've seen him progress and do these, you know, to become the name he is now and all these amazing works that he's now producing. But that one, I think that was an image that really struck me. I wanted to capture that moment. I think a lot of these poems are about moments as well of, you know, that strike me while looking at the image. And you know, it might not necessarily be what everybody sees when they look at that particular sculpture, but that's what caught my mind.
Yeah, and it's been an education for me as well, because, you know, I'm not that well-versed in terms of the art world and black art world over here or in the diaspora. So it's really sparked a curiosity about the original artwork. Have you found that amongst other readers of your poems?
Well, yes. I mean, the first time I read some of these poems was at the PCA-ACA conference in San Diego last year. And that was my first sort of like poetry reading, you know. And that was accompanied by images of all the pictures. And people, you know, afterwards said to me, oh, gosh, I've never looked at art like that. That's made me think completely different things about what I'm looking at and so forth. That's made me look at art in a different way. So I felt that that's probably what I wanted to do. So I felt that was good. I mean, I know that art does inspire different meanings in different people. So this is, you know, it's about exploring those meanings, really, through somebody else's voice, you know. There's a term that's used in poetry that, you know, which I'm learning about along as I go along, which is called ekphrasis, which is a term to describe art. And there's a whole kind of genre of poetry that is, you know, where poets describe art or use art as inspiration in some way. And I feel that with this type of poetry, you have to bring something different to it than the artist has done with their creation. You know, that sort of complements it or extends it in some way, you know. So I'm hoping to bring another dimension to what exists, what has inspired me in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just your narrative, your voice, and just, you know, opens it up. And it opens it up to a whole new audience as well. So... And you spoke about the fact that you know two, you've already mentioned, Yinka Shonibari and please remind me again of the first.
Donald Rodney, yes. Yes.
And what about the other artworks? Were you familiar with the artists?
Let me have a look. Yes, I was. They're all artists that that have whose work inspires me. I mean, Paula Rego, she's a narrative, you know, a figurative artist, very well known, and she's inspired me for a long time. I'm surprised that so many of her works actually inspire me to write poems about them. I think there's about four or five of them so far. Who else is there? Virginia Chahota, Zimbabwean artist who does these screen prints, and she's inspired a couple of poems. There's this a German artist, Christian Schad, who inspired the one about the pigeon-chested man and Rasha the Black Dove. So it's from a whole range of different types of artworks, mainly figurative, I feel, when I look back over them. Bill Traylor, he's a kind of self-taught Black American artist who I think is going to be exhibited in the Smithsonian, is going to do a huge retrospective of his work this year. That he inspired the Blue Pot, and that's a very kind of simple type of artwork. So just a whole range of things.
And have they read these poems, and have they made any comments about them? Or
that's an interesting one, you know, because I read these things, and then an artist said to me, you know, she read them, and she said, "Oh, but what do you think they think about that you are doing this work?" You know, and I just thought, oh gosh, you know, I wonder. So I did actually, the ones that I could get hold of, I sent a copy of the book to Yinka, and I've sent it to Zanele Maholi in South Africa. She's a photographer. And anybody who I felt that, you know, some of them are not alive anymore. So if I could get hold of them all through their galleries, I actually sent them a copy. So, I mean, I've not had any responses, but I hope they like them. You know, that's one thing, you know, so you don't know what artists are going to feel. Some of them might feel a bit put out thinking that that's not what I meant, or they might just hate, you know, not like the idea of poems being written about their art. So you don't really know. So, you know.
No, it's a fascinating process.
Yes.
It makes me wonder, but I will leave this question maybe till the end.
Yes.
Whether your art, which I'm sure it has inspired any kind of creative writing out there, or, but anyway, we'll get back to that. I'm not sure.
Yes.
It's one of those questions, isn't it? The sort of the two-way process. It's lovely. So the next one that all of them really touched me, but this had such a striking image about you know, it's the angel, and there are elements there of the nativity story and the angel Gabriel. And anyway, this is what came into my mind. You know, images of Mary carrying her baby on a mule, and the angel swoops down and wrestles with the baby. And I really thought that was just so creatively, you know, it's creative ingenuity, genius at that point. And you know, asking and saying that she's going to take her to the Pope and to see the pyramids and etc. I thought that was fantastic. Would you read? It would be great if you could read the whole poem. So again, we get
the
story.
The angel. The donkey was stubborn, and Mary dug her heels into its side. But the mule was tired of walking, and now the baby was crying. Fat little baby, all swaddled and plumpy, and Mary jiggled him and tickled him and put him to her breast, and still he was teary. And Joseph had gone off to lay a brick wall and have his hair styled into a flick. God damn it, men. But Mary bit her tongue and sent a quiet prayer up to the sky. Someone come and help. And the angel swooped down almost straight away. And at first there was a tussle. Mary held on. He's just a few weeks old. Don't take him to heaven yet. And the angel, calm and firm, said she'd take the baby to the pyramids to see the Pope and maybe some art, then bring him back. And Mary was relieved she'd see her son again and thank the winged lady before she trotted on.
Oh, fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. Again, it just got me thinking about the original artwork and, you know, the creative inspiration behind that. I don't know if you want to say a few words. I know it's always very difficult for artists to talk about.
Well, this was, I really do like this painting. It's called On the Way to Egypt by Paula Rego. And it's just such a strange moment. This angel has obviously swooped down and she's tugging at this baby, which Mary is holding while she's sitting on the donkey. So That's such a strange image, you know. And then I was getting inside Mary's head because, I mean, you know, mothers have been there, mothers of young babies, you know. It's like, oh, will someone come and help me? You know, this idea of an angel swooping down and helping you in that moment. But then you're sort of terrified at the same, in that same moment, you know, of what this help really means. And I also, it's such a strange image because the angel does really seem to be wresting the baby away from Mary in the painting. So I was kind of exploring what that moment might mean, you see. And I wanted to have an open-ended poem, but you don't quite know whether she's entrusted this baby to a stranger, whether something terrible is going to happen, whether it's a kind of idea that the baby has actually, you know, been spirited away or something, you know. I wanted to leave that open, really.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I had to read it quite a few times. Because again, that image of wrestling, you know, to me, I was thinking, so it was the baby dying and she's just praying that the baby's not taken away, you know. So again, it sparked so many pictures in my head. Well, you've done so many things, obviously visual arts, filmmaking, and I know you had a time in South Africa, and now the creative writing. One would say you're constantly reinventing yourself. And I do remember in the earlier interview under the Creative Goddesses, you know, you said that as an artist, to keep yourself relevant and, you know, for also economic reasons, that you have to diversify, and you called yourself a polymath, which I found a very interesting definition or title. So how did you get into the writing? You said you were inspired by this, but perhaps you've been doing other writing as well.
Yes. You know, there's always a little bit of writing that's going on, or, you know, I have been a scriptwriter in the past. This particular set, I can't remember when I started actually writing. I'd probably have written the odd poem, and then it kind of, it snowballed, really, you know, into, I think I wake up one day and think, oh, I know what I'm going to do, a series called The Art Poems. That was it, you know. I'd seen other artists' work, or maybe I'd seen some, you know, some artist poetry books and so forth. Thought, oh, yes, that's a good thing to do. But also, I suddenly thought, because originally I wanted the book to be published with the images, you know. I thought, oh, gosh, nobody's done that. Nobody's kind of put a book together that's actually art images, you know, contemporary art images as poetry about them side by side. So that's what I originally wanted. Then when the offer came along from New Generation African Poets, which was brilliant, of course they don't do that kind of publication. They had it in mind for their collection, which is brilliant. So I was very glad to, you know, accept that offer. But I still sort of nurture this hope of, you know, having them, you know, with images accompanying them.
Yes, it would be fabulous. And I would love to come and see and hear that. It's this kind of a multi sort of visual and audio experience.
Yes,
you know, it would be a fantastic experience. So any events planned soon? I know I missed your opening
recent meeting. Yes, hoping to. I know there's one a big event which is at a visual pedagogies conference in September. That's the sort of next main event. That will be quite a large audience, I imagine, because there's speakers coming from all over the world to talk about visual representation and how meaning is created visually. So they asked me to come along with my poems for that. So I'm quite pleased about that. I like to talk to different audiences, though, not necessarily academic audiences. So, you know, it'd be nice to just... I think I might just go and stand outside the Tate and start reading my poems.
Oh, we'll look out for you. But please do send us notice of all these venues, because we just like to make it known, because again, I'd really love to be part of that experience.
Oh, thank you, Nima. Yeah.
So tell me about the New Generation of African Poets. Now, these are new to me as well. And I've been reading some of the other poets from all over Africa, and absolutely, again, it's been a bit of a revelation. It's fun, you know, all this creativity. Of course, you know it's there, but but I didn't know about this series. So just tell me about the series, Akashic Books, if you like, and did you know about this series? Had you been aware of?
Well, no, I mean, I think I had probably been aware of it in passing, but not, you know, specifically as you would when you get invited to submit something for it. No, but I mean, it is, has been going on now for a number of years. I think this is about the fifth outing of poets, and the editors, Kwame Dawes and Chris Abani, go out and search for up-and-coming African poets from all over Africa. And they are also in charge of the African Poetry Book Fund, which has a competition that they run every year. And I think a lot of the authors are sourced through there. You know, the prize-winning author usually gets published, you know, their chapbook gets published as part of these series. They have, you know, been at the forefront of champion African poets, new up-and-coming African poets for quite some time. And, you know, some of the names like Kayo Chi Ngoni, who's written the foreword to my VR poem, so I'm very lucky to have somebody like that, is doing extremely well. You know, he won a poetry prize recently. I can't remember what the title of the poetry prize was, but, you know, it's quite a prominent one. And he's doing extremely well. A lot of the other poets, you know, you start to hear their names soon. Impressed me most about this series is that there, you know, quite a number of them are women poets as well, you yes. know, and they're, you know, they're representing such a range and different voices of Africa.
Absolutely.
You know, like me, I spent the majority of my life now in the UK, or, you know, 10 years in South Africa. So I'm kind of like, you know, a kind of journeying African, really.
Yes,
you know, with a northern accent. So I mean, I like the idea that they're you know, they're embracing a very different idea of what an African poet should be. That's, you know, that's very refreshing.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, I'm enjoying going through the series, and it's made me thinking about the earlier publications as well. So again, wonderful education in terms of creative writing throughout the diaspora and poetry. So I know you don't put any barriers to yourself. So what would you say is next for Amanda Holliday? Is that a fair question to ask?
Well, I don't know. I sort of, you know, there's lots of things that I have, you know, in the pipeline, and sometimes you don't want to necessarily talk about them in case they don't come to fruition.
Sure.
You know, I'm trying to adapt a book at the moment. That is something I would really like to happen. I just feel that quite a lot has happened in the kind of cultural landscape recently. You must yes. be aware of it as well. We've had the Black Panther film. We've had, you know, Meghan Markle marry into the royal family. You know, we've got A Wrinkle in Time. We've got sort of like, it's almost like an upscaling or mainstreaming of Black narratives.
Oh, and that, yes, I like that.
Yes, and it's almost like the margins, what was considered marginal, like, you know, African poetry or whatever, is now sort of, you know, right there in the centre. We are in the centre of things at the moment, I'm starting to feel like, and it kind of makes you feel that there's a lot more leeway, you know, to do things. I don't know whether, maybe I'm just a sort of a very optimistic person, but I just feel like the time is right now for a lot of things. We've got to get out there and start striking while the iron's hot, you know, in some ways.
Very much so. And again, this opening, or this window, if you like, is very much because of the works and pioneers that people like yourself have been, you know, doing all these years, and suddenly everything is in alignment, and as you say, it's this kind of cultural oasis.
Yes, well, I really hope so. You know, I just feel it and see it, and you know, that things have come together. We've got Black Woman winner of the Turner Prize last year. I mean, so many different things on different levels that you know, change must come. You know, I mean,
yes,
it's important.
If it's not coming already.
Now, yes.
Another lovely one, again, really, really funny, humorous, and quite sharp in its own way, is The Blue Pot. Would you read that for us?
Okay, let me try and find it quickly. You know what page it's on?
Page 11?
Oh, page 11, right, okay. I haven't got that sort of mapped out. Ah, yes. This is the one inspired by Bill Traylor's image. How the old man ran with his belly out and a spindly cane and a big blue pot pressed on his head and his barky dog up the lot.
Still makes me laugh. He's just thinking about the spindly man with his great big pot and then this dog. Again, I'm really curious about the original artwork. So, and I've been, you know, I have seen, I've been viewing some of them, and really, yeah, fantastic work out there. If we can end on your poem, The Cross.
Okay.
I think there's a line there where you say that, you know, we all have to bear our own crosses, which is so true.
Yes.
I wonder if you would read it. And yes, if you read it first and then.
Okay. Cross. We all have a cross to bear, a thick sleeper, burnt wood, borne across the shoulder back with fortitude, resolve, impatience that wears down hard. We hitch and tilt this way, that, cursing our load, plotting secretly to ditch the blunted beam in some passing alley or well where God won't look.
I love it. Where God won't look.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. How we pray and hope that God won't look. where do you ditch your heavy load? And again, that might not be a fair question, but hey, you're an artist. You can make it up if you like.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this was such a funny little image. It was an etching by Paula Rego with this kind of, you know, kind of a frumpy looking woman holding this big wooden thing across her shoulders, you know. It's not even a cross. It's just like a big piece of plank of wood. And it just kind of really struck a chord with me because I felt it's a kind of metaphor for what we're doing through life. You know, we're kind of propelled in a lot of ways by dissatisfaction, by burdens, you know, and... you know, or the older you get, the more challenging certain things seem to be. You know, the challenge to pursue this in, you know, this career over family or whatever it is. You know, you're constantly having to make these choices, and they become quite burdensome in a way, really. You know, so it's all about those kind of things. I don't quite know all this kind of well where God won't look. It just seemed like a right thing to say at the time. And then, you know, this is part of what I was saying earlier about our complex nature with God. I don't necessarily call myself a believer, but, you know, it's a very complex relationship when you've had a sort of, you know, really semi-religious upbringing. You know, I went to a Catholic school in Sierra Leone for a while, and then Church of England schools here. So, you know, I think it ties in with a lot of Black experience of religion, really. It's, you know, it can be quite sort of overbearing, can mould you in certain ways. You don't kind of throw it away. You might become a sceptic, a cynic. You might question God, but it's this kind of very, you know, to-ing and fro-ing relationship we have.
Very much, yes, very much. I mean, that I think that will resonate with so many people. It's that journey of, you know, constantly questioning. From you're a child, you accept, you it's a given, and then you start questioning, and then you know, as you go through different experiences, how relevant is God in your life? And there are times when you do clutch onto God, there are times when you need God, and there are times when, you know, for heaven's sake, you think, you know, where are you? And if so yes, I mean, I think we all could relate to that cross that we bear, how it, and whether those are the sum of our experiences in terms of the life journey. So I really love that as well.
Yes, and I was interested in a friend of mine who's actually a doctor, particularly, you know, liked that one. So I felt that maybe it resonated with her experiences just as a doctor, you know, the choices she makes and so forth. So,
oh wow, you mean a doctor to you know, the healthcare of looking after the healthcare of other people, or
yes
absolutely. And You know, for some people, those life choices which they're making maybe every minute, isn't it, of their day. Exactly, would resonate. Well, thanks so much, and thanks so much for sharing and discussing a little bit about your ideas and the art poem. It's really imaginative. It's fantastic. Please let us know if there are any readings at all.
Right, okay.
I for one would love to be there. Just a different experience as well. So just let us know where you can purchase the art poems or how.
Right, well, you can get the whole box set, which I do recommend you get, from Akashic Books if you Google their website, or you can get it from Amazon, and it's called The New Generation African Poets Tano. I have a small number of copies of my own art poems if you can't afford the full box set, and you can get them through my PayPal, which is PayPalMe at Amanda B. Holiday, Holiday with one L. And that will be £6.45, and that includes postage within the UK only. I can't send it abroad for that. But so if you kind of go to PayPalMe and, you know, it'll ask for your address and everything and make a payment, then I can put one in the post for you. So that's until I run out of of them. So that's the two main ways of getting hold of them.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Amanda. I say thank you for now. I have a feeling that I'm going to be interviewing you again very soon.
Okay.
Hopefully. And maybe with some of the other poets.
Yes.
I would love to do that. That would be actually a really
nice thing. Yeah, that would be brilliant, I think. And also with this this Zoom medium, I think it was probably possible to get a few people together, wouldn't it? All on the same.
Possible. Yep.
You know, so that would be really good. Yeah.
So yes, I think that's definitely something to look forward to. So, but for now, thanks, Amanda.
Yes, thank you very much, Nima.
Yeah, thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.